All right, the CCHA show is back here, getting ready to talk about the final weekend of the first half of the season. We have Matt Dean from Minnesota State play-by-play radio, KTOE. Thanks, Matt, for coming on.
Yeah, good to be on. Thanks for having me.
You have a Mighty Ducks jersey you're wearing?
Yes, it's a 66 Gordon Bombay jersey. When I'm attending just any sort of hockey event as a fan and I have no rooting interest in the teams, this is just my typical go-to. So
gotcha.
You trying to say neutral?
Ducks are involved.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess that's true. And the Ducks are leaning more into the old like Disney era logo.
It looks like it.
Now, so it feels like this, you know, wearing a Disney movie jersey, it feels like you're rooting for the Ducks now. So that's kind of ruining the neutrality of this this get up for me.
And that's great. Jack from Hittinger from USCHO, written some good stuff recently. Jack, that I saw over at the website there, a regular on the CCHA show. Jack, thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me back.
And I know you took in a Wilco concert last weekend.
I did. I'm wearing flannel now for listeners. I was not wearing flannel to the show, but I was in the minority of white dudes not wearing flannel. There's a lot of flannel there, but I did see friend of the podcast, Shane Frederick, at the show. So that was nice.
Very cool. Shane was there. Awesome. All right, let's get into last week's games. We'll start with in chronological order, Augustana. They started the weekend early on Thursday in Anchorage, kind of completed a two-week stretch in Alaska. They played Fairbanks the first weekend. Then against Anchorage, they tied 2-2 on Thursday and then won 3-2 on Friday. So a couple of wins up there for the Vikings. They also lost to Fairbanks their second game in that series, but won the first one. Jack, what do we take away from this Augustana venture into the Alaskan wilderness here?
I don't know. I mean, they finished 2-1-1. That's right, with the overtime win. So overall, I think that's got to be a positive for them to finish with a winning record. It's not difficult. It's not easy to go in there and win, or to go up there and win. I think a lot of teams have trouble making that trip, especially when you're doing the whole two-week thing. But it seems like they had a nice weekend. Peyton Matsui, I think, this weekend, I know he played for Alaska last year, a transfer. I think he had a pair of goals, maybe another one or two assists. So it was nice for him to sort of, I think he's from Minnesota, but it's sort of a homecoming back to Alaska. It seems like he had a pretty nice weekend. Overall, it's got to be a nice way for them to close out the season. I don't know if Coach Reboyne was there for the whole series or when he leaves for World Juniors, but
I think he was there. Yeah,
probably a good way for them to end his before he leaves for the team, to end with a couple good games.
Well, those are here. He doesn't have too far to go this time, right?
I thought it was next year that they were here.
Oh, you're right. It is next year. Okay, good.
I don't
know make any plans. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. But you're right. No. So, yeah, Coach Reboyne off to be an assistant on the World Junior team shortly, but gets a couple of wins there up in Alaska. Matt, anything to take away from the Augustana side other than that they're not playing as many league games, and this is kind of how they're filling some of their weekends where everybody else is playing in conference play. They're the only ones not doing that.
Yeah, I think just the 2 weeks away, they're not the first team that's ever done that, doing the kind of Fairbanks Anchorage 1-2 where you stay on the road for a couple weeks. And I think it's a nice opportunity to go into the break that way. You come away with a couple of wins, overall positive week. I mean, hockey coaches a lot talk about those types of trips, and I saw some, you know, social media stuff of them having some fun on the trip, seeing kind of some of the sights in Alaska. So when you're on the road as a team like that for so long, I'm sure it was challenging doing that during probably finals week, I would imagine, overlapped. But you have a chance to, you know, kind of get out, be together as a team for the most part, outside of some awkward proctored exams on the road. You get to relax and focus on hockey. I think those types of trips are important for teams, and they've set themselves up in a good position, you know, only playing the half schedule. They're in second place going into the break, right behind the Mavericks right now.
Absolutely. And it's going to be interesting to see how they come out of the break and how that affects their chances at trying to catch the Mavericks, who are out to a pretty sizable lead. We'll get to them. We had one true sweep on the weekends, a couple of, I don't know what you'd call, like, modern sweeps or the like, we'll talk about later. But Bowling Green, 2-0 over Northern Michigan. Then the second game was a little bit hairier, 4-3. They hang on. The Falcons, a much-needed sweep to get back on the right track there. I don't think they've won a game in seemingly over a month there. But getting back on track here, Matt, what do you think from Bowling Green's standpoint? I know Northern's not having a great year, so these seem like games you have to win to kind of keep pace.
Yeah, I mean, that being said, nothing is ever a guarantee of a sweep, and certainly to do it back-to-back games in regulation is not an easy feat. I mean, like, ask the Mavericks. They're in first place. They've been the most consistent team in the league, and the one result that Northern Michigan's got was a tie and a shootout win over the Mavericks about a month ago. Just one of the few blemishes that MSU's had in the last couple of months of hockey, really. But so to take two regulation wins was much needed. I saw the Falcons two weekends ago when they got swept by the Mavericks. One of the games was involved in overtime. Bowling Green, I think, have been a little bit unlucky. They're one of the better shot volume teams when you look at the stats in the league, like when you look at the possession stats, you know, shots attempted, shots given up in terms of attempts. They're second best in the CCHA. I don't think, you know, just from seeing them for one weekend and looking at the shot charts, like the Mavericks didn't give the Falcons hardly anything between the circles. I don't know that they're always getting a ton of shots from the highest quality areas, but they've got some good scorers who are underperforming. I'd say so far this year, like Ryan O'Hara was one of their big goal scorers last year. He still doesn't have a goal this year. I think he was the only guy that got the double digits for BG last year. He's got 11 assists, but he has not found the back of the net yet. They're getting a lot of shots in on teams, so I there's some bad luck to it. I don't think they're always getting the puck in the dangerous areas of the ice. The Mavericks held them to something like 15 scoring chances the entire weekend 2 weeks ago. You know, it's a well-coached team. They're trusting the process, under their new head coach this year, and I think he's got them going in the right direction right now. So I think that was maybe a little bit sliding into the positive side for Dennis Williams' team, where they maybe had some tough breaks going their way. Bowling Green's a better team than the start they've gotten out to in conference play, and I think that showing that they were the better team against Northern Michigan and to do it not just getting points both nights, but doing it in regulation was big for their confidence.
Jack, anything special here? They got a shutout on Friday, of course. It was Christian Stover, who we haven't seen a whole lot of over the last couple of years now, but he played in both games this weekend, and it was solid.
Yeah, he looked like he was sort of maybe back to his normal old self before he had the injuries. I was just wanted to point out, Ryan Ouellette is pretty good again for Northern. One thing I've noticed is, aside from maybe a handful of games, they're not getting blown out, really. 2-0, 3-4. Last week, I think they were 2-1, and what was it?
2-1, 3-1.
2-1, 3-1 against Ferris. They've been in pretty much every game. Obviously, they beat MSU in the shootout that for their one point that they have so far. I think scoring is obviously an issue for them, but it seems like at least having Ryan Ouellette back there has been very, very good for them to at least be in games and not be down 5-0 at first intermission. It seems like they're in the game the whole time, which is encouraging. maybe
I'm not sure if that's more or less frustrating, I guess, to to be 1-16-1 and have all these opportunities to get wins and be so close. But maybe that obviously I feel like it's a good thing, and I feel like you know, they're playing a respectable style and they're playing hard still, and I think that's something that they can build off that if they can have a good second half and kind of have maybe more modest goals, but still have those goals set for the second half of the year. Maybe they can reach some of those. Let's get to Minnesota State and Lake Superior State, a battle of top two teams in the league when the weekend began. Real tight one, 2-1, Minnesota State winning on Friday, and then a 3-2 overtime win on Saturday. Matt, plenty of drama here. Some goalie interference calls that I believe both went the Mavericks' way in this series. But at the end of the day, they were able to kind of they built leads and were able to hold on there for the most part. I know the overtime game obviously was the Lakers did tie it. But what did you think about this one, seeing it firsthand?
Yeah, I mean, just going through, I thought it was a very even series. I mean, obviously very fine margins with a couple of one-goal games. I think that was to be expected. I think Minnesota State had more of the puck, a little bit more in terms of creating offensive chances, but Lake Superior State like really dug in, played a tough game. And they looked really dangerous for some flashes off the rush and caught the Mavericks on some transition opportunities a couple of times in the series. Friday night, I mean, Minnesota State, as much as we've talked about how terrific Rhett Pitlick's been and might be the most skilled player in the league, the Mavericks have really leaned pretty heavily on getting scoring from really their top three lines. And they've got a good fourth line that plays as much as the other three lines and kind of more do defensive work where they kind of shut down the opposition's best scoring line. But those other three lines all can really score. I don't know that the Mavericks have gotten them all going at once yet this year. So it was good to see Luciano Wilson kind of carry the banner for the Mavericks on Friday night. I think this guy's a really special hockey player. His like on ice vision, the way he passes, the way he kind of sees plays develop is really special. It's almost a little bit kind of like Rhett Pitlick as a passer, at least. So he was able to score twice, both really nice goals. I actually forgot that there was a review of a goaltender interference call on Friday night, because the one on Saturday was looming so large. But he gets a really nice pass from Finn Williams and scores his second of the year in the first. Lake State ties it up. The second Wilson goal, it was his first multi-goal game of his college career, was really special. Luigi Benincasa gets an assist, kind of got it to him at neutral. He skates into the zone himself. We've seen him try to do this at least once or twice, passing it to one of his teammates where he tries to play it off the end wall and get it to a teammate. This time he passed it to himself, perfectly placed, stuffed at home, go-ahead goal at the 7:21 of the third period, and the Mavericks win 2-1. So Lake State got one goal in that game. I mean, most of the night it was a defensive battle. I don't think the Mavericks had a shot, maybe one before the first intermission. Both teams were really feeling each other out. It was kind of from a neutral perspective, kind of a snooze fest for a lot of the game, especially early. I thought that really changed on Saturday, where both teams were just really up for it, a lot more aggressive. It was up and down. I know it was just a 3-2 game, but this was a super entertaining game. Rhett Pitlick and Josh Grohl scored inside a minute of each other in the first to put the Mavericks up. Eventually, Lake State calls it back. I mean, besides the goal that was waved off in overtime, probably the biggest other video review call of the series was when Jordan Power got shown off for a game misconduct. And in my opinion, nothing was called on the ice. It was kind of like the scrap after the play. There was some pushing and shoving. It looked like we didn't even notice it at first. And I mean, to be honest, the referees didn't see it at first either. But the defenseman for Minnesota State kind of, you know, he face washes a guy who kind of just gets their jarring at each other. And I mean, when you see the replay, like he gets a glove on the face mask. So
yeah.
that's, I guess, by the book, probably a penalty. I don't think he grasped it or jerked a guy around where it warranted anything. I don't think it warranted a 5-minute major. I was really surprised that it warranted a game misconduct. That kind of changed the game. Lake State scored on that power play to make it 2-1. They'd get an even strength goal to tie it up. And then, yeah, I mean, the Mavericks obviously can't complain too much because they get the overtime goal wiped away that would have won it for Lake State. That was more questionable, whether it was goalie interference. It looked like very fine margins. To be honest, if it wasn't goalie interference, I wonder if it was enough to warrant like kicking the goal in the back of the net. There was a couple of things I thought they could have reviewed it for.
Right.
They challenged it for goaltender interference. So they overturned the goal. I mean, the coach for Lake State just loses it, goes nuts at the end of the game, as you would understand.
Yeah, Damon, yeah.
State scores, yeah, Damon Witten, Minnesota State scores about a minute later. And yeah, it was, you don't want to see games decided like that. Like Luke Strand in the post-game press conference was obviously ecstatic to get the points, but he said in his own words, like Damon Witten's one of his good friends. He said he felt bad about challenging for the goal. It's not the way you want games to be settled on, like a video replay review, wiping away an overtime goal. That's how it was settled. Josh Grohl, who had a really good look and missed it earlier in overtime, ends up scoring it. So Minnesota State comes away with points on both nights. So, yeah, I mean, unfortunately, the video reviews were a big part of the story on Saturday, and it kind of overshadowed what was a really well-played, hard-fought series between, I don't know, Bemidji State's in the conversation, but I think these were two of the best three or four teams. I haven't seen Augustana yet, so maybe I'll say four just to hedge there a little bit, but two of the best three that I've seen anyway facing off.
Right. That's fair. Jack, anything from the series that stands out to you? I know, I mean, a lot of these goal interference, you see it in all levels of hockey, right?
Yeah.
I mean, even the NHL, it seems like the NHL has even a bigger issue with this than
well, I was just going to say, I mean, it's a game in Mankato. Of course, there's going to be a penalty review in an important game in overtime. I think we've seen that a couple of times over the past couple of seasons. So I'm not really surprised that kind of stuff happens in Mankato. I feel like it's just, for whatever reason, they're just drawn to those controversial plays. But I think seriously, I don't know. I mean, Lake State looked like they were in it both games. Mm-hmm. Seems like they are a good defensive team, maybe sort of kind of like a Bemidji State type team, but it does seem like they also are able to score a little bit more from what I've seen from them. I mean, just looking at the box score of Friday night's game, that 2-1 game just looks like sort of what you would see from MSU and BSU. That sort of game. Obviously, Rourke Appleby's been really good for Lake State. Seems like he was pretty good this weekend, from what I gathered. I only saw highlights, but yeah, I think Lake State's pretty good. They've got I think their overall record maybe doesn't show how good they are. Just some of those results that you look at, Michigan State, Ohio State, losses that maybe they shouldn't have lost. So overall, I think they're a pretty good team, but I agree with you that I think it's probably Minnesota State is going to have a lot of work to do to lose going forward. I know there's still a lot of hockey left, but they just seem so good. I mean, they haven't lost since that Bemidji State game in October. What was that, October? And they haven't really shown that many signs of breaking. So they just have talent everywhere. So I think they're obviously going to be the team to beat going forward.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. They're obviously in a great position, and we're going on points percentage. So, like, and Augustana is the team that are closest to them. So, I mean, one bad weekend for the Vikings is a lot worse for them than one bad weekend for Minnesota State. So I think that's a big key factor, too. And a lot of the the contenders are going to have to come to Mankato in the second half. Like Augustana's blown series with the Mavericks is in Mankato, I think, in February. Michigan Tech's still going to have to come to Mankato. The really, I guess, if you look at the top, you know, four, top five, the only real contender right now, Minnesota State will have to go to. You said the top six teams in the league. They're only traveling to Lake State pretty late in the year. Everybody else in the second go-around has to come to Mankato. So you factor all that in, it's really good for the Mavericks. Lake State, I thought, were great. Like one of the nicks I have on them or critiques, they're pretty reliant on the power play. And they had their opportunity this weekend.
Yeah, they did.
I think it was 7 of 8. The Mavericks were.
Yeah. 7 of 8 killing penalties, yeah.
Yep, so that's huge. Minnesota State's PK has been really good. I was looking at it today because they've had an inopportune number of 5-minute majors that have just come at really bad times. So they've their penalty kill numbers are worse than you would think, and it's still pretty good. They're over 82% or something, I think, right now. But
yeah,
they've given up a 5-on-3, and they've given up 4 power play goals on 5-minute penalty kills. So they've given up 4 like regular 5-on-4 2-minute power play goals all season. That's my stat of the day for you for Minnesota State.
See that? Yeah, there's been a number of people who have tried to come up with some kind of adjusted penalty kill that includes like just like bases it off of penalty time instead of opportunity, like instead of opportunities. I know when you score a power play goal on a major, it adds an opportunity, but that's not help. None of that's helping your penalty kill, unfortunately. It's not. So if you could base it on just amount of time, then there would be, but there hasn't been a simple way to kind of not only come up with that number, but also have a way to explain it that people would look at and understand what the heck you're talking about. So until we have that, we're going to have to go by the kind of rudimentary penalty kill number, which, yeah, you want to be over 85. You definitely want to be over 80. And then everything else is kind of relative to, you know, what you think a good penalty kill is. Jack, anything else here from this one before we move on to the Beavers?
I don't really have that much else to add.
Perfect. Let's go to the Beavers and the Huskies. It was a wild series here. Michigan Tech scoring in the final minute to tie the game on Friday. The Beavers do get Adam Flamang, I think, scored the shootout winner to get 2 points there. And then all hell breaks loose on Saturday after a 3-3 going to the third, and Tech ends up winning 9-5. Jack, I know you're shaking your head here, but I know you can't explain what happened here, but what happened here?
I don't know.
I mean, I watched, so I kind of know. This is
important. Well, see, I don't even. I wasn't able to watch the whole thing because I was at that concert.
Yeah, the World Cup. Okay, well, that's better for you.
I actually did check the score. When I checked the score, well, literally, I checked the score, and it was the third period, and they had just scored. It was like 4-3. I was like, oh, sweet, Wilco's starting 4-3. That's cool. And then there's a. I got my phone. I checked it at intermission. I was like, dear God, what happened? So that kind of tells you what where my head was at. I was not thinking that. Sure.
You had a better night though.
That would happen.
The Beavers.
So, I mean, the one thing that that scoreline kind of reminds me of is last year when Michigan Tech was in Bemidji.
That's true. I think
they went up 4-0 and Bemidji won 6-4. I mean, maybe that's the closest analog I can think of to the type of game that it was. I mean, I was even, but I don't even know if that's right. It just seems like. I mean, the Beavers must just fell apart in the third period. I was even like, oh, they must have scored a lot of power play goals. No, they didn't even score that much on the power play. It just seems like maybe, I mean, Satisari took the lead and then Tech scored right away. Seemed like there were like 3 goals in the span of, what, 5 minutes, 3 minutes, something like that.
Maybe one was an empty netter, and then I got another 2?
Yeah, so I don't – maybe one of those goals just kind of let the floodgates open.
Maybe. Or there's a lot of backdoor tap-ins there. Maybe it's blown coverage. I mean, it's one of those things where it's like you can't really blame any one person for this to happen, right? So
yeah, so
certainly not Scholl, who's been great all year.
Yeah, and I'm kind of surprised that they left Scholl in there to tell you the truth. But
I think it happened so quickly. You know, it's like
That's true.
Sometimes it unravels like that.
Yeah, and then, I mean, then I was just looking at the score, too. I mean, you look at the score, they get one, Beavers get one back, like, 5 minutes left. You're like, it's 7-5. Okay, this game could just be absolutely insane. And then Tech, I think they got, did they get two empty netters or just the one?
I think just, one, just and then one. Another goal late, just, okay. I don't know, yeah. Like I said, they're probably committing numbers forward and getting beat again. It's like one of those, you see it sometimes in other sports where it's like, when you're committed to try and win the game, sometimes, or try to come back as much as you can, you're giving up odd man rushes the other way, just that's what happens when you do that.
No, I think it's just one of those games for both teams that I think could be a turning point. Obviously, Michigan Tech, I think they played pretty well, but obviously last week against St. Thomas, they had the split, and I don't think they were happy with that. Was that last week or was that the week before? I don't know.
The St. Thomas series? That was last weekend, yeah.
Okay. So Michigan Tech was obviously looking for some more momentum, and I think, I mean, anytime you score 9 goals on a team, I think you get some momentum, but sort of to do that right before the break, right before they got these two big tournaments coming up, I think that gives them a lot of confidence going forward that they can make some hay in the second half. I don't know. And Bemidji just, I don't really know what to make of the Beavers, because you feel like they've beaten the Mavericks, they've beaten North Dakota, they've beaten Minnesota, but I don't think they have a sweep all season of any team. They've just been splitting with everybody. So they're just not very consistent, and you want to see them be a little more consistent. I'm sure if you're Tom Sartori, that's what you want to see, but at some point you just have to start sweeping teams if you want to win the McNaughton Cup. I don't know how possible that is, but I mean, last year we saw them go on a run.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Like they did this year, and I think they were in a similar sort of position last year. So it could happen, but you got to feel like maybe this will be a wake-up call for them too. Just, hey, we got to start taking care of our own business if we want to win something here.
Was it around this time last year when they started making that run, or right after the break?
I can't remember. Yeah.
Okay. Well, Matt, anything else from this one that sticks out in your mind?
Yeah, I mean, it's like that was just the shocking scoreline of the weekend for sure.
Yeah.
Like with a team with Matias Scholl in goal giving up 9 goals. Yeah, like we said, one of them was an empty netter. One of them was with the game out of hand. So a couple of kind of garbage time goals kind of change it later at the end of the game. But yeah, I'm shocked to see Bemidji down in sixth place right now in the CCHA standings. Entering the break, they'll have a non-conference game against Minnesota Duluth still before the end of the year. That'll be a good, you know, kind of reset test for them. And I mean, their schedule kind of lines up nicely to maybe start to make a run in the second half, 2 games at Bowling Green, a couple against Northern Michigan, who are floundering, St. Thomas, who I thought were one of the top tier teams in the league, but they just haven't played nearly consistently enough, kind of like Bemidji, but it's gone even worse for the Tommies. And then they'll have Ferris State after that. They'll have they'll have a couple of road trips late in the year at Tech and at Minnesota State. So I think they're just going to be looking to put themselves in a strong position to get home ice for that first round of the playoffs. And maybe if they really go on a heater in January, they could be knocking on the door going into those last few weekends with those 2 big road trips that I mentioned up to Houghton, and it'll be in Mankato to end the year. So Bemidji, obviously they've shown they can hang with just about anybody in the country. They've got great goaltending. They'll get Scholl working right, no question about it. So that always makes them a dangerous team. And they're just such a hard physical team to play with. Nobody looks forward to it. They just beat the crap out of you when you play Bemidji. So I think that's going to be a scary team when they're rested coming out of the break. I don't know if they're in McNaughton Cup range right now, but I expect them to go on a run and get home ice for the playoffs.
Yeah, we'll run down a little bit of those kind of situations right after a quick break here, and we'll be back with the CCHA show.
Passion, talent development. NCAA hockey offers all that, and its players graduate at a 93% rate. Trevor Zegras.
And they score on the lacrosse move.
Jake Gensel.
Gensel banks it towards the goalie. Score.
Cale Makar.
Cale Makar. He scores.
Stars on campus before the NHL stage. Whether you're a fan or a player, nothing compares to college hockey.
My goodness gracious me.
Visit collegehockeyinc.com and follow at College Hockey.
All right, everybody, back here on the CCHA show. Matt Dean, Jack Hittinger, going to look ahead to the holiday weekend contest coming up here. We won't have a show next week because it would be recording right around Christmas Eve, Christmas Day type there. So we're gonna skip right over here since there are no games this weekend and talk about those games, and we'll run down some pairwise situations and some playoff situations here in the CCHA now that there's only 8 of the 9 teams that qualify. Northern Michigan, we'll get to it, but they've kind of put themselves in a tough spot to not be that team on the outside looking in. But Quick Trip holiday face-off, Ferris State is taking part this year. Lake State played in this tournament last year. The Bulldogs are taking on Wisconsin to open things here in that tournament. The other two teams in it are UConn and Alaska Fairbanks. Clearly, when you get to these, especially this tournament and the GLI, Jack here, other CCHA teams will be looking at this as the kind of the last chance to improve the not only the conferences pairwise as a whole here. So, what do you see from Ferris State here in this opportunity they have in the Quick Trip? This is in Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Yeah, they haven't. I think they've played. They played okay in their non-conference already. I mean, they played pretty well against Miami. Not doing great, but split with St. Lawrence. They had a couple decent results in the non-conference. Wisconsin's obviously they struggled. They were struggling a little bit at the start of the year. I think they've gotten a little bit better, but
yeah.
I'm sure that Bob Daniels and Mike Hastings are going to be well prepared for one another at least. So I'm sure that Mike Hastings is not going to look over a Bob Daniels team, I guess is what I'm saying. Maybe in the past that might've been true, but I actually kind of like that matchup. I think it could be a fun game. And I think Ferris is sort of right there, I think as well. Just they're not getting their doors blown off either. I think they've played pretty well. So I think I like that matchup for them actually against Wisconsin. I don't know if they're going to win it, but it should be an entertaining game.
Not only is it in Milwaukee.
From Ferris, I know they're playing a bunch of former CCHA opponents over there, Kyle Kukkonen and another Tech former skater there.
Yeah.
Mosley.
That's right. I'm too far removed from the Michigan Tech series.
Sorry, you've moved on. Some people haven't.
not only is it in Milwaukee, it's at the Pfizer Forum, home of the NBA Cup champion Bucks. So very exciting.
Was that last night?
It was last night. You got to, if you didn't tune into a very awkward trophy presentation in front of just silent fans in Las Vegas that had zero investment in the game. And then that Bucks.
They're trying something. I can't. I can't knock them for it. Yeah.
Good. To be fair, it would be a similar atmosphere if Ferris State would upset Wisconsin and go on.
Hope.
And if the Badgers don't win the Quick Trip holiday face-off, that's going to hurt the ticket sales at the Pfizer.
If it's Alaska versus Ferris, they won't like it.
No,
that
would not be the optimal championship game if you're looking at it from
a
ticket sales perspective.
We'll take
absolutely.
Ferris, too.
Absolutely. Wisconsin's got a ton of momentum. Ferris State have been, I mean, much better. Maybe not much, but better than people expected. Wisconsin, you know, I think people in Mankato always talk about it. It takes a while to get used to playing Mike Hastings' system. You saw some high profile players transfer away from Madison. So you don't see as many draft picks on the Badger roster as you would expect to see from a Big Ten team, but they're starting to play well together. They almost swept Michigan State last weekend, have been getting some much better results in a really big, really strong Big Ten conference this year. So, yeah, that'd be a really nice win for Ferris State. Try to upset the apple cart and ruin the Badgers being in the holiday faceoff championship. So that'll be an interesting one to watch.
And not to mention Michigan State, despite that, retains or moves up to number one in the poll, which is important because they are in action against a CCHA team, potentially two here this weekend, in the GLI down in Grand Rapids. And Jack, we have the Huskies taking on Western, who are probably as hot as anyone else in the NCHC. And Michigan State, aforementioned, number one team in the country, taking on Northern. And if you want to kind of look at what would be some of the bigger pairwise upsets of all time, you have Northern sitting at 63 and Michigan State at 2. And that's what we have in the second game of the GLI, which is that is on Sunday, December 29th. That's a 7 o'clock start there. So we'll start with that game and then talk about a little bit Michigan State and Western. But Jack, what do you is there any hope for Northern fans watching this game?
I mean, they always have a chance with Ryan Ouellette. If they keep it scoreless, someone gets a fluke goal, he stops a shot. I think
we saw Tech win a game there against Michigan State last year, right?
Yeah,
or was that the shootout win?
Yeah, I think that was actually.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think there's always a chance. From what I've seen in Michigan State and from what I've seen in Northern Michigan, I don't think that's going to happen. But that's why they play games, I guess, is what they say.
Yeah, but there's always, when you drop the puck on any given night in college hockey, there's always a chance for something to happen. So
I just want to say I didn't even realize it. I was looking at the GLI results. Michigan State hasn't won it since 2009.
Wow.
You know who was there then? RPI.
RPI, you're right. And you know who
had to get that in.
You know who lost to, you know who lost to Michigan State 6-1 in the final?
RPI.
RPI, yeah. So, well, see, the RPI, I was there on the radio actually calling that game. And the day before, the Engineers beat Michigan 3-2. And the note there is that that GLI was the first time that I kind of come to any kind of opinion of Michigan Tech as a hockey program. And it was that their band and RPI's band kind of joined forces for the weekend, because I don't think the entire RPI band traveled to Detroit for this. So all the RPI fans and the Tech fans, both being, you know, engineering tech oriented schools, kind of, you know, you team up to root against Michigan, obviously, if you're Michigan Tech. It worked out for them, as RPI did win 3-2. That was one of the more exciting hockey games I've ever called, especially being at, you know, obviously Joe Louis Arena, the old one. I guess the only one. And I met John Van Biesburg down below. It was a fun weekend. But yes, thanks to Jack for bringing up RPI, so I didn't have to today. That was very nice of him. Like I said, anything can happen to GLI. RPI can beat Michigan. Who knows? Northern. So Michigan Tech, coming off that 9-5 win, they get Western, who's a top 10 team, I think. At least that's where I had them. Let's see.
They're like, Western is like flying under the radar. Six. They're really good. Yeah.
And I've had them there the whole year. See, it's funny.
They're five. And they're five. In the
Matt, are you a voter too? Well. Yeah. Are you a voter in the USAHO poll, Matt? Or that they don't have you doing that?
No.
Well, Jack and I, obviously Jack does. He writes for them. But I always find it funny how the polls kind of, and not to toot my own horn, but just kind of like slowly move towards where my votes have been all year. I feel good about that. So. I've been high on Western Michigan all season, and they're finally up where I have them just about. So
they're anyway, fifth. I'm not right about everybody. Right now.
I just have to talk about when I am right. So yes,
yeah, Western's fifth in the pairwise right now.
Yeah,
that's a really good team. I mean, that's not nearly as much of an upset, right? If Michigan Tech beats them, but that's I think that's if you're rooting for Team Chaos, you're rooting for a Tech Northern Michigan. Great Lakes Invitational final, but yeah, what Western Michigan—they might be the best team in the NCHC this year, which is, I think, would be wild to say coming into the year. But we got some Minnesota guys on that team, so I've been kind of following along.
Okay,
Western Michigan, Alex Bump from Prior Lake—he's kind of out in Jack's neck of the woods. He stole the state tournament from everybody a few years ago. Like, he was kind of a star when Prior Lake knocked off Creighton in the first round. He's a beast. They got the Slikinski brothers. One of them's a goalie from
Northern. Yeah.
Yeah. So they always grab some good Minnesota kids out there at Western.
Yeah. Northern, former Northern actual skater and then former commit goaltender on a pick of the Kings. Jack, let's get to the other games coming up next weekend here. Obviously the second game of that Quick Trip face-off is on Sunday. I think, yeah, so Wisconsin gets the late game on Sunday no matter what. It just means that the 2:30 Eastern game could be the championship if Ferris wins. We don't have a problem with that being the championship game either. St. Thomas is headed to St. Cloud State on that Sunday. Is that for the no, that's a split series from the opening weekend, I believe.
Played the very first game of the series.
Also, Bowling Green's doing the same thing with RIT.
Yeah.
A very long split home and home with the Tigers. But first, St. Thomas, they lost 1-0 to St. Cloud at home on the opening weekend. They get a chance to go back up there and play here. This has been a tight series really since last year. I know the first couple of meetings weren't very close, but St. Thomas was obviously in the middle of their transition. Still are transitioning technically to D1, but they have a much better, obviously, product on the ice this time around. We talked about the fact that they've been a little bit unlucky. They just kind of been, other than their special teams, they've been a kind of middle-of-the-road team when it comes to offense and defense, which is a little bit surprising. Matt, you can get us started on this one with the Huskies here.
Yeah, just like shockingly middle-of-the-road. I mean, one of the teams picked to finish as the league favorites. I mean, one or two by the media and the coaches heading into the year. I think things just have not clicked together at the same time. Like, the special teams for the Tommies have been unbelievable. The power play's just been on an absolute heater, because I remember going into the Minnesota State series that they had, which was back in early mid-November at this point. They were 0-19 to start the year, and then they popped in a couple of power play goals against the Mavericks, kind of got going, and they're one or two in the league right now. Lake State's kind of falling off a little bit. So they've just, I mean, they've been on an absolute tear in the power play, but then their 5-on-5 plays sloughing off a little bit. So things just haven't clicked at the right time. I think I said this last time I was on the podcast, the 8 minutes or whatever leading up to the media timeout when the Tommies played Minnesota State in Mendota Heights was like, they didn't score, but it was some of the most dominant possession hockey that any team has played against the Mavericks this year. They just played keep away from Minnesota State for 9 minutes, and then it just weared them out. They forced the Mavericks into a couple of penalties, and they pumped in the two power play goals, kind of haven't looked back on special teams since. And I thought, wow, this is going to be the two teams that are going to be battling for the McNaughton Cup. It just hasn't been that way. They're way too far out, you know, as has been mentioned in the show before, to be thinking about a McNaughton Cup at this point. But it's another team where I wouldn't be surprised to see them figure it out in the second half. They fell off last year with injuries. If they can stay healthy this year, I just think that they have the talent to play better and maybe be a home ice playoff team and be a Mason Cup contender.
Yeah, they're the only team in the league that's brought back both of their kind of goalie tandem too, and they really haven't been the issue seemingly, but they haven't been maybe quite as sharp as they were last year, both of them, especially, you know, Seibel, who was lights out last year despite not having the win-loss record, which we could get into that another day when not necessarily determining factor of how well you're playing. But anyway, Jack, anything about this St. Thomas, St. Cloud State series? I know Huskies are sitting at 12th in the country here.
Yeah,
NCHC's pretty even seemingly, other than Denver, who's dropped a few recently, and then we talked about Western already.
Yeah, I've seen St. Cloud quite a bit more than I think
any
of the other teams, mostly because they're on TV up here. But I think that they've looked pretty good. I know they just played North Dakota, and I think they were a couple I think they got swept, but there were some controversial moments in that series too. I don't know.
Why not?
Just lots of them about it. You can read all the drama
We'll go read Brad. Yeah, friend of the show, Brad Schloss.
I think St. Thomas has a chance to beat St. Cloud. Last year they beat them in at the Herbrook Center.
Last year.
Yeah, well, last season.
Last season in overtime. Yeah, it was like a 6-5 game or 5-4.
Got
wild.
They've beaten them there. I know that's kind of a tough place to play. What with the the big ice and all that going up there and playing there. Sorry,
yeah,
I was kind of rambling, but
that's okay. No, it's yeah. Go ahead.
St. Thomas had the last weekend off, so they'll be a little more fresh too. Maybe I don't know. It's kind of hard to tell after the holidays, but I think this should be a good game. You would hope, and maybe the Tommies can pull off a win.
Yeah, for however you think they've played this year, when you look at a matchup like this, you can easily see them going up there and winning this game just because of kind of the pedigree and what we saw from them last year and the fact that they've had some good results this year. It's just they haven't been consistent with them, seemingly, you know. So it'll be certainly be one to watch there on that Sunday afternoon. It's a 4:07 Central start there for that. And then finishing off that night, RIT heads to Bowling Green. Just the single game there, as I mentioned, it's I wouldn't say a replay, that's like a soccer term, but like a coming back a split series there where Bowling Green went and won in overtime in Rochester earlier this season. But again, another important game against a Atlantic Hockey team that's usually near the top of the conference in a non-conference situation. So we talk about how important these games are to everyone, especially, you know, maybe Bowling Green's not in the running for an at-large themselves, but it elevates the league if they're able to get a good result here. Jack, anything special from this RIT-BG matchup here?
You probably just want to make sure you can take your opportunity to beat Atlantic Hockey teams if you're a CCHA team. I was looking at if you look at the out-of-conference records, I think Atlantic
is
at like 250 or something like that, which is not great. I need to double-check that. CCHA was at... They're
248, right?
CCHA is at like 433, which is
433. Decent. Okay,
maybe where you expected to be with some of the other teams that we got. It doesn't matter per se for either teams at large, but I think Bowling Green win can only help the league. I'm sure it helps BG too, just get sort of back on track for them.
Continue their winning streak here a little bit, maybe.
Yeah.
Matt, anything from Bowling Green other than, like Jack mentioned, being able just to extend some quality play here at home?
Yeah, I was looking it up at the interconference records, 238. Their winning percentage, Atlantic Hockey's, is out of the conference right now. So for the good of the rest of the conferences pairwise, Bowling Green's got to pick up that sweep and finish it off. It took overtime when they went to New York in the last game.
Yep.
I think kind of a typical like Bowling Green, not series, but single game where they outshot them 45-27. So again, I mean, like watch the shot charts, like Bowling Green are trying to get in volumes of shots, not necessarily always waiting for the highest quality chances. And they need to get somebody going. Ryan O'Hara has got 11 assists and is tied for the team lead in points. But he's a goal scorer, so I think he needs to see one go in, and some of the top line guys need to start pumping in some pucks into the back of the net with more regularity to get the Falcons going in the right direction. Now, not just to single him out, but he's good enough to be able to do it.
Brody Waters having a pretty good year in his second season. A lot of times you see that, you can call it a sophomore slump or whatever you want from a second year player. We've seen a little bit up in Michigan at Michigan Tech. There with some of their sophomores that haven't quite produced as well as they did their first time around, but Brody Waters certainly has kept up his scoring pace for the Falcons there. Couple more days of weekend here, if you want to call it that, because it's a holiday. You have the finals and the third place and finals of the GLI on Monday, and then an exhibition game that will send Matt down to Mankato, presumably to call Manitoba against Minnesota State. Just trying to stay fresh there, Matt. I know they added that game late.
Yeah, it's interesting because the Mavericks are going to have two exhibition games between their next competitive game. So they'll be playing that second weekend of January. So I talked a little bit with Coach Strand about it on our kind of coaches show segment this past week. And this is a chance. The Mavericks didn't play an exhibition game against another opponent early in the year or before the season. So it'll be a chance for some players that haven't got as much run. There's one freshman skater, Joe Rice from Prior Lake, who has not gotten into a game yet this year. Presumably he will play. And there's a few goalies that have been vying for some playing time that I think are going to get some chances because Alex Tracy, I feel bad we didn't mention him, but like we've just talked about him ad nauseum. 20 straight starts to begin the season and leading the country in save percentage. So there's three goalies behind him on the roster, including a freshman, Eli Pulver, who, you know, it won't be his official debut, but if he gets into the game, it'll be his first, you know, shots faced from an opponent wearing another jersey. So that will be more like a traditional exhibition on the 30th. They'll mix up some lines and see how guys work in different roles against Manitoba University. And then in that first weekend of January, it's going to extend the road trip the Mavericks will have up to Northern Michigan. They're going to play, I think they're number two ranked in Division III right now, St. Norbert's College in Green Bay. And because you're on the road and you're bringing, you know, your limited roster of guys you can take with you in the road trip, that's going to be more a warm up for the second half. And you're going to be facing a pretty good opponent who, you know, maybe it's a little bit of coach speak to like pump the guys up for the game, but he thinks they could hang with like half the teams in Division I. They're that good. Granted, Luke Strand, he has some ties there. It's his first boss that he had in college hockey is still leading that St. Norbert's program. So there's some ties with that school.
He coached D3, I think, before he was at junior.
D3, I think, right? Or is it?
Yeah. He started out as an assistant at Norbert's, and then he was the head coach at UW-Eau Claire for a while, where he graduated
perennially in the top in the NCAA tournament for Division III. Yeah,
absolutely.
And we'll close things out here on the show with the final series, game of that kind of Christmas into New Year's weekend, New Year's Eve. Minnesota Duluth heads to Bemidji to take on the Beavers. That's again a single game there, from finishing off a split series that the Beavers kind of won in dramatic fashion up in Duluth the first time around in overtime there, Jack, with Jackson Judding getting the overtime winner against the Bulldogs to start off the year. I know it's maybe a different feeling playing the Bulldogs now than it was then. I think they might even have been ranked when they met the first time. But the Bulldog, Minnesota Duluth, not having the year that they would like. Obviously, they've run into some injuries here. But, Jack, what do we expect from this Bemidji State-Duluth game?
Duluth, I think, is one of the teams that Bemidji has played historically and beaten, like one of the so-called bigger teams in the state that I think historically they've had the most success against. Like, I know North Dakota and the Gophers, they've always sort of struggled against, but Duluth, they've consistently been able to beat Duluth. I think much to the chagrin of Duluth fans, they don't really appreciate the style that Tom Sartori plays, I don't think, which is kind of funny. But so I think that they're probably a team that usually match up pretty well with Minnesota Duluth. And obviously they've already beaten them once this year. You think that they could do this? I mean, I can see them sweeping this series. I think the Beavers are a better team this year, to tell you the truth. Just from what I've watched of them, from what I've seen with Duluth, I think, especially with Duluth's struggles and injuries, I think this should be a game that the Beavers can win. And I mean, when you finish your non-conference 4-2-1 against North Dakota, or 4-3-1, I guess, against North Dakota, St. Cloud, Duluth, and the Gophers, it's a pretty successful non-conference season. Yeah. So I think that doesn't happen often with the schedule that the Beavers tend to play. So when you do that, you have to at least view that as a success. So So I'm sure that they want to do that. I think maybe the New Year's Eve might be a little more a higher attendance game. I think last year they played St. Cloud and it was a decently attended game. So could be a fun game to watch.
Yeah. Another chance, as we mentioned, against an NCHC team, you want to take advantage of those opportunities, get that out of conference win percentage up for the CCHA. They'll have a chance to do that on New Year's. Matt, anything else from the Bulldogs and Beavers there?
Yeah, I like Bemidji in that second game of that kind of split series, like we talked about. Duluth, you know, always have talent. They're one of the eight or so youngest teams in the country this year. So I mm-hmm. think, like Jack was getting into it a little bit, but I think that plays into Bemidji State's heavy style. Get some freshmen up against the boards, go in hard on the forecheck. That could be a long night for the Bulldogs if Bemidji are up for it, but you never know what you're going to get with a team with a little bit of a layoff and coming off a break somewhat where they're kind of off for roughly a week before they get back into practice and get into that one. And yeah, the NCHC record, I know I was trying to look up that really quick, what the CCHA has done, but yeah, obviously it's a big series for pairwise and, the CCHA has not done well against the, NCHC this season. It's getting better with some recent results, 7-13-3. So try to swing that series a little bit closer to 500.
It's actually better than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah. the NCHC is just like weirdly down this year. They have a 584 winning percentage out of the conference. Like they still have a couple top teams, but Miami, Ohio is really dragging them down. And Big Ten and Hockey East, you know, snapshot this season have clearly surpassed that conference, at least what they've shown in out-of-conference action.
Yeah. Taking a quick look at the pairwise overall, it looks right now like you have the Mavericks at 12 as far as the CCHA is concerned, and then you have to go all the way down to Michigan Tech and Augustana at 29 and 30. Those are tough to kind of dig out of that kind of hole. So if the league wants to be have two bids in this, it looks as though it's going to have to be Minnesota State and then a automatic bid champion there in the Mason Cup, just by how well Minnesota State's played. We saw that, 2 years ago, Jack, with Minnesota State being an at-large bid and Tech?
Yeah.
Or was it the other way around?
Yeah, Minnesota State, I think.
I think you got it right.
Well, no.
Tech was the at-large.
Minnesota State had to beat Northern to get in.
Yeah. No, yes.
Because it was Northern probably should have won that game, I remember. And
Minnesota State needed to win that to get into the tournament. That's right. But Tech had built up their much like Minnesota State this year. That's one of the comparison I wanted to make, was that much like Minnesota State has this year, Tech that season 2 years ago built up their non-conference record so well that they were able to kind of withstand not getting the at-large. When they beat number 3 BU in Arizona, they swept a series with St. Lawrence. They and then winning the GLI or having a good result in the GLI that year as well.
Yeah,
all kind of propelled them to that at-large bid, and that's kind of where Minnesota State, who doesn't have any non-league left, they get all that done early stages of the season, but they have a very good out-of-conference record there, and then they've. I mean, if you're not going to have a perfect out of conference record, you want to just take care of business in conference, that'll also get you to a decent pairwise. But having that kind of having those games, those wins behind you, also working for you, is what's going to propel you into that situation that the Mavericks find themselves in. But Matt, anything in the pairwise that interests you as far as where the league is and where the Mavericks have found themselves?
Yeah, I mean, the Mavericks are in a nice spot. I think you said 12. The list I'm looking at, they're 13. But the right point is they're
tied with Ohio State, as far as I can tell. But yeah.
Oh, tied. Okay. The list I'm looking at just is not separate. Yeah, they both have 51 pairwise points. So you're correct.
Yeah, they're tied for 12th. But yes.
Point is they're kind of right at that cut line where you feel comfortable. Like you start dropping into 13-14 range and nothing is guaranteed. So, sure. You know, it's early. some teams up towards the top of that list are going to have some stumbles and fall down. But I think Minnesota State entered the weekend at 11. So they've dropped, despite, you know, one of them was an overtime win, but sweeping. So I think that kind of tells you how tenuous the position is. I mean, no one feels bad for the Mavericks at the start they've gotten out to the one goal games they've won. But I'm just saying, like, we're talking about this scenario where two CCHA teams get in. If it happens, that involves the Mavericks losing probably in a Mason Cup final. And right. If that happened, they would, the position they're in now, they would not be, I don't think they would put cameras in front of the team during the selection show, because it wouldn't be a sure thing that they're getting into the tournament. So that's what I'm saying is it's like, okay, the path is there, but the Minnesota State needs to create a little bit more of a gap, get into that, you know, closer to the top 10 to feel good about themselves going into the postseason.
Yeah. I mean, if they ran away with the conference, which they very well could,
and right.
were undefeated in the second half, which I mean, maybe that probably won't happen, but if they lose one or two more games, they still probably will climb up pretty. I mean, they might climb up. I think there's a chance. It just depends on how it plays out.
There's going to be a lot of infighting above them with the likes of, you know, Ohio State in the Big Ten, St. Cloud State, BU, Michigan. Those are all
each other.
Right. They're going to, exactly. And so that's the kind of ground and you can make up if you're able to, like, as Jack said, have as big a second half as he did in the first. There's a real good chance they could put themselves in a position to not have to worry about the Mason Cup as much, which they've had in previous years, right? They've been years where they've won the Mason Cup and didn't necessarily have to.
Yeah.
For that long run of our six straight McNaughtons and the like that was broken, what, last year only?
Yeah.
By the Beavers.
Mm-hmm.
Anything, Jack, to add about potentially, you know, we're going to have,
you just
it looks like we're going to have a new McNaughton Cup or back to Minnesota State, I guess.
If I guess you look at the pairwise, I was just
looking
at the pairwise, like, I mean, Augustana, I think, started out last weekend before they were at 21 or something like that. And now they're down to 30. So
yeah,
it is pretty volatile. I mean, Augustana, I think, has a shot. They've still got a bunch more non-conference games, including two
against Colorado. That's true. They have more than anybody else in the league. Yeah.
They play Colorado College, which would be a big series, I think, later in January. So,
true.
But it does kind of tell you just like how much you need to win those non-conference games, like you said, how important they are, because one loss could drop you down so far. But even if you do win, if you're a team like Bemidji, you'd have a pretty good non-conference series, then you struggle in conference, then the way that the CCHA is playing, then you can't really make that up. So I think, so it's sort of the disadvantage that the league has right now is that some of these teams are getting a whole lot of wins out of conference. So playing conference schedule isn't necessarily going to help you like it will for a team that's in the NCHC or Big Ten or whatever. So it's kind of an unfortunate quirk of the system and just the way that the conferences are. But maybe there's a chance that somebody could sneak in there. I kind of doubt it. But Tech has those two tournaments left against some pretty high ranked pair.
Yeah, I mean they can make a run up the board too, right? If they have two good weekends there.
30 right now, or 29, 30, whatever they're at.
Yeah, they're right in that range there. Where...
So you'd like to see that sort of thing happen. I don't know how possible it is, but I think when you start talking about the McNaughton, that also gets complicated because of the points percentage thing. And I tried sort of figuring out what would happen if Augustana won out and Minnesota State won every game except for against Augustana, and I think they would be tied. I don't know that. I'm not the math guy. I'd have to talk to some Michigan Tech grads about that. But I think in that case, Minnesota State would be the number one seed. It's what it seems like. But
okay, well, I think we're going to deal with that when we get there. I don't want to worry too much about that.
There's too much. There's too much that can happen there.
Yeah.
But I guess I was just trying to see if it could happen. Like what
the scenario
were. I think Augustana very much still could win the McNaughton. It seems like. Michigan Tech definitely has a shot still. I mean, you just look, they're only six games out or whatever. So,
Or
6 points back.
Yeah.
It seems like Minnesota State is playing well right now, but they could stumble. Some teams could have a heater of a second half, like we said, and I think that's very possible. So,
if we can't get two CCHA teams in, I want Long Island in the NCAA tournament. They're at 21 right now in the pairwise. That's like the Sesame Street. One of these is not like the other game.
But, yeah, I see that.
That's my Christmas hope. If we can't get two CCHA teams,
Matt's in. Did not know Matt was a big Sharks guy, but. Yeah,
I just root for maximum chaos if it's not for the CCHA. So I think that would be
fair.
That would be the maximum chaotic outcome.
All right. Well, before we get out of here, I'll let you guys give a little plug to what you have working or where people can find you. Matt covers the Mavericks every game on the radio. Yeah, go ahead, Matt.
Yeah, next two games are not going to be televised. We talked about them a little bit. Two exhibition games, unusually for the Mavericks, during the winter break before the second half. But you can imagine you're there through the magic of radio. So we'll be on
there you go.
On KTOE. So exhibition game against Manitoba on the 30th. That's a random 3 in the afternoon game. So if you're really starving for some college hockey over the break, not too many games going on. We're the only show in town on December 30th at 3 p.m. So follow along for that in KTOE. And then we'll have that that Tuesday. I don't have the date in front of me, but that Tuesday before. Yeah, the 7th. Thank you. We'll be in De Pere, Wisconsin. On that road trip up to Northern Michigan and covering that game against a good Division III opponent and lots of good storylines like we were talking about with Coach Strand and his whole staff's kind of connections to Wisconsin and Division III hockey. So I think that will be a fun exhibition series as well, too, that we'll be covering on KTOE.
All right, well, listen to Matt there in those two exhibition games. The Mavericks get ready for the second half, number 11 team in the country there. Jack, where can people find your work?
USCHO.com. I should have a piece out tomorrow, just a sort of second half or first half review of the CCHA. Tried to go through and pick out MVPs for each team. So,
sweet.
It's just my opinion, so don't yell at me.
You can yell at Jack.
I guess you
can. Just do it on Blue Sky. Yeah.
Don't do it on Twitter because I don't check there anymore.
You won't see it.
Whatever it's called.
If you want to yell at Jack, yell at him on Blue Sky.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Very cool.
And
all right, guys. Well, happy holidays and enjoy the weekend. The only weekend of the year during the season with no CCHA hockey is coming up here. So we'll all enjoy that here at the CCHA offices and you guys as well. Have a good holiday weekend.
Thanks, Barry.
Thank you. We'll be right back.